Chapter 27. Anthony knew what it was about when he wrote it. They'll probably be after you tomorrow, Mr. Spence, restoring his cigar to his lips, puffed at it slowly. In the pause that followed, there was an instant during which the universe seemed to Hugh Milner like a sounding board bent above his single consciousness. If he spoke, what thunders would be sent back to him from that intently listening vastness? "You see," said Mr. Spence. The universal ear bent closer, as if to catch the least articulation of Milner's narrowed lips, but when he opened them, it was merely to reinsert his cigar, and for a short space nothing passed between the two men, but an exchange of smoke rings. "What do you mean to do?" "There's the point," Mr. Spence at length sent through the rings. Oh, yes, the point was there, as distinctly before Milner as the tip of his expensive cigar. He had seen it coming quite as soon as Mr. Spence. He knew that fate was handing him an ultimatum, but the sense of the formidable echo which his least answer would rouse kept him doggedly, and almost helplessly, silent. To let Mr. Spence talk on as long as possible was no doubt the best way of gaining time, but Milner knew that his silence was really due to his dread of the echo. Suddenly, however, in a reaction of impatience at his own indecision, he began to speak. The sound of his voice cleared his mind and strengthened his resolve. It was odd how the word seemed to shape the act, though one knew how ancillary it really was. As he talked, it was as if the globe had swung around, and he himself were upright on its axis, with Mr. Spence underneath, on his head. Through the ensuing interchange of concise and rapid speech, there sounded in Milner's ears the refrain to which he had walked down Fifth Avenue after his first talk with Mr. Spence: "It's too easy, it's too easy, it's too easy." Yes, it was even easier than he had expected. His sensation was that of the skillful carver who feels his good blade sink into a tender joint. As he went on talking, this surprised sense of mastery was like wine in his veins. Mr. Spence was at his mercy, after all, that was what it came to, but this new view of the case did not lessen Milner's sense of Mr. Spence's strength, it merely revealed to him his own superiority. Mr. Spence was even stronger than he had suspected. There could be no better proof of that than his faith in Milner's power to grasp the situation, and his tacit recognition of the young man's right to make the most of it. Milner felt that Mr. Spence would have despised him even more for not using his advantage than for not seeing it, and this homage to his capacity nerved him to greater alertness, and made the concluding moments of their talk as physically exhilarating as some hotly contested game. When the conclusion was reached, and Milner stood at the goal, the golden trophy in his grasp, his first conscious thought was one of regret that the struggle was over. He would have liked to prolong their talk for the purely aesthetic pleasure of making Mr. Spence lose time, and, better still, of making him forget that he was losing it. The sense of advantage that the situation conferred was so great that when Mr. Spence rose, it was as if Milner were dismissing him, and when he reached his hand toward the cigar box, it seemed to be one of Milner's cigars that he was taking. There had been only one condition attached to the transaction. Milner was to speak to Draper about the Bible class. The condition was easy to fulfill. Milner was confident of his power to deflect his young friend's purpose, and he knew the opportunity would be given him before the day was over. His professional duties dispatched, he had only to go up to his room to wait. Draper nearly always looked in on him for a moment before dinner. It was the hour most propitious to their elliptic interchange of words and silences. Meanwhile, the waiting was an occupation in itself. Milner looked about his room with new eyes. Since the first thrill of initiation into its complicated comforts, the shower bath, the telephone, the many-jointed reading lamp, and the vast mirrored presses through which he was always hunting his scant outfit, Milner's room had interested him no more than a railway carriage in which he might have been traveling. But now it had acquired a sort of historic significance as the witness of the astounding change in his fate. it was Corsica, it was Brian, it was the kind of spot that posterity might yet mark with a tablet. Then he reflected that he should soon be leaving it, and the luster of its monumental mahogany was veiled in pathos. Why indeed should he linger on in bondage? He perceived with a certain surprise that the only thing he should regret would be leaving Draper. It was odd, it was inconsequent, it was almost exasperating that such a regret should obscure his triumph. Why in the world should he suddenly take to regretting Draper? If there were any logic in human likings, it should be to Mr. Spence that he inclined. Draper, dear lad, had the illusion of an intellectual sympathy between them, but that, Milner knew, was an affair of reading and not of character. Draper's temerities would always be of that kind, whereas his own will, his own, put to the proof, had now definitely classed him with Mr. Spence, rather than with Mr. Spence's son. It was a consequence of this new condition of his having thus distinctly and irrevocably classed himself that, when Draper at length brought upon the scene his shy shamble and his wistful smile, Milner, for the first time, had to steel himself against them instead of yielding to their charm. In the new order upon which he had entered, one principle of the old survived. The point of honor between allies. And Milner had promised Mr. Spence to speak to Draper about his Bible class. Draper, thrown back in his chair, and swinging a loose leg across a meager knee, listened with his habitual gravity. His downcast eyes seemed to pursue the vision which Milner's words evoked, and the words, to their speaker, took on a new sound as that candid consciousness refracted them. You know, dear boy, I perfectly see your father's point. It's naturally distressing to him, at this particular time, to have any hint of civil war leak out. Draper sat upright, laying his lank legs knee to knee. That's it, then? I thought that was it. Milner raised a surprised glance. What's it? That it should be at this particular time? Why, naturally, as I say. Just as he's making, as it were, his public profession of faith. You know, to men like your father, convictions are irreducible elements. They can't be split up and differently combined. And your exegetical scruples seem to him to strike at the very root of his convictions. Draper pulled himself to his feet and shuffled across the room. Then he turned about and stood before his friend. Is it that, or is it this? He said, and with the word he drew a letter from his pocket and proffered it silently to Milner. The latter, as he unfolded it, was first aware of an intense surprise at the young man's abruptness of tone and gesture. Usually Draper fluttered long about his point before making it, and his sudden movement seemed as mechanical as the impulsion conveyed by some strong spring. The spring, of course, was in the letter, and to it Milner turned his startled glance, feeling the while that, by some curious cleavage of perception, he was continuing to watch Draper while he read. Oh, the beasts, he cried. He and Draper were face to face across the sheet which had dropped between them. The youth's features were tightened by a smile that was like the ligature of a wound. He looked white and withered. Ah, you knew, then? Milner sat still, and after a moment Draper turned from him, walked to the hearth, and leaned against the chimney, propping his chin on his hands. Milner, his head thrown back, stared up at the ceiling, which had suddenly become to him the image of the universal sounding board hanging over his consciousness. You knew, then? Draper repeated. Milner remained silent. He had perceived, with the surprise of a mathematician working out a new problem, that the lie which Mr. Spence had just bought of him was exactly the one gift he could give of his own free will to Mr. Spence's son. This discovery gave the world a strange new topsy-turviness, and set Milner's theories spinning about his brain like the cabin furniture of a tossing ship. You knew, said Draper, in a tone of quiet affirmation. Milner righted himself, and grasped the arms of his chair, as if that too were reeling. About this blackguardly charge? Draper was studying him intently. W, what does it matter if it's blackguardly? Matter, Milner stammered. It's that, of course, in any case. But the point is whether it's true or not. Draper bent down, and picking up the crumpled letter, smoothed it out between his fingers. The point is, whether my father, when he was publicly denouncing the peonage abuses on the San Pablo plantations over a year ago, had actually sold out his stock, as he announced at the time, or whether, as they say here, how do they put it? He had simply transferred it to a dummy till the scandal should blow over, and has meanwhile gone on drawing his 40% interest on 5,000 shares? There's the point. Milner had never before heard his young friend put a case with such unadorned precision. His language was like that of Mr. Spence making a statement to a committee meeting, and the resemblance to his father flashed out with ironic incongruity. You see why I've brought this letter to you? I couldn't go to him with it. Draper's voice faltered, and the resemblance vanished as suddenly as it had appeared. No, you couldn't go to him with it, said Milner slowly. And since they say here that you know, that they've got your letter proving it, the muscles of Draper's face quivered, as if a blinding light had been swept over it. F for God's sake, Milner, it's all right. It's all right, said Milner, rising to his feet. Draper caught him by the wrist. Why, you're sure, you're absolutely sure? Sure. They know they've got nothing to go on. Draper fell back a step and looked almost sternly at his friend. You know that's not what I mean. I don't care a straw what they think they've got to go on. I want to know if my father's all right. If he is, they can say what they please. Milner, again, felt himself under the concentrated scrutiny of the ceiling. Oh, of course, of course. I understand. You understand? Then why don't you answer? Milner looked compassionately at the boy's struggling face. Decidedly, the battle was to the strong, and he was not sorry to be on the side of the legions. But Draper's pain was as awkward as a material obstacle, as something that one stumbled over in a race. You know what I'm driving at, Milner. Again Mr. Spence's committee meeting tone sounded oddly through his son's strained voice. If my father's so awfully upset about my giving up my Bible class, and letting it be known that I do so on conscientious grounds, is it because he's afraid it may be considered a criticism on something he has done which won't bear the test of the doctrines he believes in? Draper, with the last question, squared himself in front of Milner, as if suspecting that the latter meant to evade it by flight. But Milner had never felt more disposed to stand his ground than at that moment. No, by Jove, no. It's not that. His relief almost escaped him in a cry, as he lifted his head, to give back Draper's look. On your honor, the other passionately pressed him. Oh, on anybody's, you like on yours. Milner could hardly restrain a laugh of relief. It was vertiginous to find himself spared, after all, the need of an altruistic lie. He perceived that they were the kind he least liked. Draper took a deep breath. Why, you don't, Milner, a lot depends on this. You don't really think my father has any ulterior motive? I think he has none, but his horror of seeing you go straight to perdition. They looked at each other again, and Draper's tension was suddenly relieved by a free boyish laugh. It's his convictions, it's just his funny old convictions. It's that, and nothing else on earth. Draper turned back to the armchair he had left, and let his narrow figure sink down into it as into a bath. Then he looked over at Milner with a smile. I can see that I've been worrying him horribly. So he really thinks I'm on the road to perdition? Of course you can fancy what a sick minute I had, when I thought it might be this other reason the damnable insinuation in this letter. Draper crumpled the paper in his hand, and leaned forward to toss it into the coals of the grate. I ought to have known better, of course. I ought to have remembered that, as you say, my father can't conceive how conduct may be independent of creed. That's where I was stupid and rather base. But that letter made me dizzy, I couldn't think. Even now I can't very clearly. I'm not sure what my convictions require of me. They seem to me so much less to be considered than his. When I've done half the good to people that he has, it will be time enough to begin attacking their beliefs. Meanwhile I can't touch his. Draper leaned forward, stretching his lank arms along his knees. His face was as clear as a spring sky. I won't touch them, Milner, go and tell him so. V. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.